kind of a interesting challenge to articulate Buddhist practice to a modern 21st century sensibility, and to do it in a way that's, in a way, I don't know enough Greek mythology, but my impression is that Janus had two heads looking in two different directions. And Anne and I are often, we have some two-headed birds in the hallway, and we are kind of two-headed birds. And we don't expect any of you to do what we've done, which, for whatever karmic reasons, was to pretty much absorb ourselves in Tibetan language, culture, thought, Tibetan Buddhist, and Buddhist language, culture, and thought. And we don't think you have to in order to progress with practice. But having immersed ourselves, there are some things that, you know, you just start, as it were, getting used to buying into a kind of Tibetan worldview, and then, you know, we have to kind of pluck ourselves out of that soup and dust ourselves off and figure out how to talk about that world to our world in a way that makes sense. And it's not just a translation ease of what is available in Tibetan Buddhist language and phraseology. So the phrase that came to me tonight was different registers of knowing. And what do I mean by that? Well, the word knowing and not knowing, is those two opposites are very, very big in Buddhism. Not knowing doesn't mean like blankness. It actually pretty much speaks to the way we operate ordinarily. In Sanskrit, the word is avidya. I think at some point it's related to maybe wisdom. Sounds a little bit vid and vis in German, you know, wissen, wisdom. We won't go too far there. But anyway, avidya, a is a negative in Sanskrit. So not knowing, if you hear about how do we get all messed up, how do we get screwed up, it's through not knowing. How do we get free? It's through vidya, knowing. And if we go from the foundational schools all the way through to Dzogchen, and Dzogchen, the big word is rikpa, which is just a translation for knowing. Vidya, knowing. And, you know, we have enormous numbers of ways of working in Buddhism, and we're going to be doing a retreat this weekend. And, you know, we think a lot about what allows individuals to kind of, what conduces to us getting it, and what's difficult. And I think knowing that there are different registers of knowing is kind of a first major portal to practice. I think there's a Japanese saying, at least I heard it as a Japanese saying, probably some other cultures have something like this, you know, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. You know, if the only way we are used to knowing and in our culture, this is really, really big, is kind of cognition and knowing with our sort of minds and thoughts. You know, the first place that people run into problems is even in the world of feelings. So, you know, I make my living as a psychotherapist and talk about different registers of knowing. I actually try to ask people what they're feeling. How are they, to use Anne's breakdown? You know, not so much like, what are you doing, which people love to talk about, and that's what our culture is immersed in. And, you know, I see, okay, so what do we do in Houston? We are doctors and we are oil engineers, oil and gas, as I've been told. And then we're the lawyers who deal with all the problems that are created between people playing in oil and gas and medicine. And those are like the major professions. And then we have educators, well represented here, to make people know about oil and gas, and know about medicine, and know how to become lawyers and how to talk. So we do have artists, thank God. And actually, artists have different ways of knowing. So I think one of the reasons we love our artists is because at some deep level, we know that they represent a different register of knowing. And as much as there are so many tides and waves of trying to eradicate the artistic sensibility, even in our very, very cognitive culture here in Houston, there's a pretty darn big appreciation of the arts and the artistic way of knowing. So it's quite lovely. So, what do I mean by registers of knowing? So, one thing I'll say at the outset, it's very, very easy to hear a lot about spirituality and some of the things I might even say tonight and start becoming a like kind of ordinary mind bigot. And so, you know, a lot of Buddhist teachers like to make bugaboos out of ego mind. It's like, you know, talk about racism. Ego mind is like, you know, the object of a kind of a racist hatred. God forbid if any of us were to have an ego mind. So, you know, you read a lot of English stuff on Buddhist practice, and I mean, it's like ego mind. You know, it's like a horror movie. And that's not good. Like one-upping each other. Oh, that's just your ego mind run amok, or golly gee, my ego mind is run amok. It's kind of painful. We have to really, really be kind to ourselves and kind to others. And love is actually a wonderful way to enter a different kind of register of knowing. So, at the outset, saying I don't want anybody to become an ego mind bigot or an ego mind racist, it is both very, very useful, very, very necessary, and actually, developmentally, if you don't have a quote ego mind, whatever they mean by that, and you know, if you want to play around, you can look at my book and I kind of go into what I think it means. Nobody's ego mind. It can mean almost anything. But I think the two biggies that if you look at a lot of Buddhist English about what they're talking about when they're talking about Buddha's ego mind, they're talking about pride, A, really, really. That's really what they're talking about, is pride. And as a subset, if they're even a little bit more sophisticated, they're talking about a kind of ordinary, what we call in our business, a dualistic mind. And that is our pretty much our everyday mind, which is kind of saturated until we pay some attention to it, with the presupposition of subjectness and objectness, selfness and otherness. And this is what righteous Buddhists seem to hate. Kind of. Ego mind. You're stuck in your ego mind. So it's our dualistic, prideful, subject-object, self-other mind that is very, very ordinary. And so, you know, that's one register of mind. We're very, very used to it. We're very, very facile with it. And it's very, very important. And until you don't need it, don't bother trying to get rid of it. I mean, if you don't need it, you won't be in it. Don't worry. Don't hate yourself. Don't hate your dualistic mind or other people's dualistic minds. There's so much hatred in the world already. Gosh, it's worse than black mold. I mean, you know, just you close your eyes in the evening and you wake up and there's even more hatred the next day. I think Buddha said something like, not by hatred is hatred cured. Good fortune cookie. Very, very wise. So our ordinary minds create ordinary conditions. If we remain in our ordinary minds, things will more or less remain the same. And so there are different registers of mind. You know, we had a symposium about 3 weekends ago, and Ken McLeod said that practice is really oriented towards achieving non-conceptual states. Not bad. It's okay. It's one golden key. Practice is really meant to orient us to allowing ourselves to experience other registers of mind. So part of what's good is to get used to and to understand how it feels to be dualistic. Maybe even to be, sometimes, you know, one way you get to learn about something is you make it even more. So, you know, maybe some practices might even include, let's get even more dualistic. Tell me how you're different from this other person. Tell me more about how you're different from this other person. And sometimes by going that kind of route of even extremizing one thing, you can kind of collapse and sort of, well, I'm not really that different. We're really very, very similar. And you can even feel that dualism might dissolve sometimes by going into more extreme dualistic conceptuality. So we have a lot of practices in Buddhism, really innumerable practices that are oriented towards providing us opportunities for moving beyond the ordinary register of knowing, our ordinary knowing. One of the biggest avenues to actually support that, just FYI, and we don't necessarily do a whole curriculum around this, although we from time to time do things that relate to it, is that knowing through the body is different than knowing through our ordinary cognition. And I think the artists in the room know this, that, and people who are sensitive know this. If you love to cook or eat, you know this. I mean, how do you know if your cake is right? You taste it. And if you're good, you can know if there's too much amaretto or too much cinnamon or too much nutmeg. Or you go over to your pal's house and they give you something to eat. And if you're like me, it's like, oh, let's see, what's that spice in there? I think there's some nutmeg in this. People do that. Professionally, it's guys, but in the ordinary world, it's gals. But what are we knowing when we're knowing that kind of thing? It's not really mind stuff. I mean, we're using an organ of the body. And it's very, very interesting how you know that. Or you hear something if you're very, very attuned to music. And how do you, it's actually true that if you pursue any, and it probably would even include thinking in some ways, and that's true. If you work with ways of knowing subtly and refinedly enough, you actually can arrive at some different register of knowing. So you could do really deep Buddhist practice with taste, with smell, with hearing, vision, imagination. So just as a large picture statement, we do a lot of practices in terms of attention, and that really has to do with calming and stilling the mind. And the different register of knowing in that is, can we come to sense in our body and in our minds and in our feelings, what does it feel like to be calm and aware? I mean, a lot of people drink a couple of brewskis and hang out on the beach or smoke marijuana or use heroin or take fentanyl, awful things nowadays to get calm. But where they go is into complete lack of awareness. It's not like being calm and aware. And so we are, when we're cultivating awareness, what we're really hoping and seeking for is not only for the mind to become calm, maybe popping a pill would be a lot more efficient for that, but it's to be calm and aware. And you don't get that with Benadryl. You just get zonk. So being able to be calm and aware is a very, very significant avenue to an alternative register of knowing and being. And one of the important things that occur with registers of knowing is that gradually, one of the things that's occurring is we're moving from a kind of more dualistic, more objective, more manipulative kind of knowing to a less dualistic, less rigid, and less manipulative, and more, in a way, passive and accepting way of knowing. Sometimes we call it being, sometimes we call it awareness. In a kind of large overview way, it can be said that if we hang out in dualistic, ordinary mind workings, in the Buddhist view, that just leads to repetitive pain, suffering, and ultimately rebirth. If we can get closer to relaxed, open awareness, beingness, that leads to more freedom, more ease, and ultimately liberation from habitual patterns of doingness. And the big puzzle is, what do you do to go from here to here? All Buddhist practice, obviously, seems to be doing-oriented. Seems to be. But it requires actually a bit more of a fleshed-out commentary. And that is that, as I said last Sunday, there's really a kind of movement between doing And then allowing fruition to occur and sensing into fruition of one's practice. So we do some attentional practice, and we may be kind of effortful, kind of exerting some energy. But ultimately, we want to sense in a very relaxed and accepting manner, what is my experience? The how that Anne so eloquently talked about. You know, there's a great line in the aspiration for bodhicitta. It's the third line in Tibetan. It's Rangrik Ursel Ying Su Chir. Rangrik Ursel, the illuminance of natural awareness, the sphere of that, to rest in that sphere. It's not the aspiration is so that I can work harder and harder at calm abiding, may I be practicing. It's to rest. I mean, the word is like just so beautiful. Ngelso chir. Chir is because. Ngelso is just like ease. It's a very, very sweet Tibetan ngelso phrase. So in order to rest in the sphere of natural awareness, illuminance, we practice. And that ultimately is liberation. And interestingly also, I'll just say something briefly and then I'll hand the baton over to Anne. There are two other ways of practicing, just main sort of rubrics. One is cultivation of wisdom. And there are a lot of practices for wisdom, a lot of analytical meditations for wisdom, a lot of contemplations, reflections for wisdom. We contemplate impermanence. We contemplate things are dependently originated, that seems that something that is a whole is made up of parts. We contemplate that things are lacking in inherent existence or autonomous existence. And there's this big bugaboo Buddhist word, emptiness, that things kind of are empty. They are dependently originated, and it's that very dependent origination is their emptiness. It's their emptiness of their substantiality. Now, one of the interesting things is that you can either look at the is aspect of things, or you can look at the nature aspect of things. It's almost the what and the how that Anne talked about. We can look at the dependent origination of the table, or we can look at the emptiness of the table. And when we contemplate, if we contemplate in certain ways, we will end up with a sense of things aren't solid, they aren't findable, they are in a way space-like. And so, you know, in the Jewish Kabbalah, the ultimate is described in two very, very simple words. They are in Hebrew, Ein Vayesh. And so Ein is like nothing. It's absence. Ein, absence. Yesh is very simple. It's there. It's like something obtains. Yesh is just like it's there. So the absolute is Ein Vayesh. Va is and. So Ein Vayesh is the absolute, is both nothing and something. And, you know, in some ways, not the same, but in some ways, you know, modern physics, we don't seem to know what there was, and then all of a sudden there's this Big Bang. And, you know, and like if you hear the physicists talking about the Big Bang and the condensed nature of matter in the first few seconds of the development of the universe, it's like mind-blowing. I mean, I don't even know that electrons and protons had any identity in that in those first few moments, let alone there are no atoms. Atoms don't have any identity yet, and there's just like energy, yesh, there's something. And it comes from where? Space. You know, so if we can cope with that mystery, you know, in a way we're ultimately trying to, with a different register of knowing, we're trying to arrive at a capacity for knowing that kind of mystery. And a tantric practice, which uses an assortment of means, including visualizations and mantras, and what we'll be doing this weekend, is yet another amazing way of trying to arrive at a different register of knowing. And while sometimes what we're seeking in our practice is to arrive at some kind of like pure examples and experiences of the antithesis of ordinary ego mind. And so, you know, again, ego mind gets a bad rap because we're either seeking some kind of silence or some kind of wisdom that's quite contradistinct from ordinary ego mind. But ultimately, you know, the literature is clear that there is a state of practice where we are going to have some kind of realization, and it's more and more integrated, and we can kind of do our ordinary stuff and have ordinary mind, but it's not swallowing us up completely, and there's some ability to have this larger and different register of knowing that is not egoic, where, let's say, the spaciousness that underlies everything is actually more palpably present in our experience. We all know there's spaciousness in everything. I mean, we all kind of get that. But it's not like most of us can say, I've touched that spaciousness. I know that spaciousness. I know its address. I know how to show other people what it's like. And it's like really palpable. I mean, it's more kind of a far distant idea, but practice is meant to actually clarify in our experience a different register of knowing such that we can palpably say, I know what the space of this table really, I know that space, or I know that space of my mind, and I know it intimately, I know it palpably. And the way of knowing, the how that Anne, again, so eloquently mentioned, seems to be different from my ordinary way of knowing. And I think one of the biggest things that I would leave you with to just marinate on is that, you know, our bodies are incredibly sensitive instruments, and in some ways, it's not exactly the case that we know our spiritual realities with our bodies. But if you were to imagine that you were knowing something holistically and sensing it with your whole body, there would be a closer sense of what that register of knowing is, as opposed to, here I am working on a math problem and I'm thinking about dividing 36 into 127. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's a very different register of knowing, the way it affects us in our bodies and our minds. And so what I would like to leave you all with is the contemplation of, in your own life, in your own experience, do you have experiences where you sense there's a different register of knowing that, you know, you just know with your whole body, you know that this is a safe place, or you know someplace else is an unsafe place, or you know someone is safe, or you know someone is not safe. And just be curious about the how of your knowing. It's really, really important in terms of Dharma practice to start exploring the how of our knowing, because while there's many, many, many words for knowing in Sanskrit and Tibetan, they are slightly differently nuanced than merely just cognizing. And so as we talk and we teach and we practice, we want to encourage you to really feel into, well, what might that register of knowing mean? What would it mean to rest in the sphere of natural knowing illuminance, natural wisdom illuminance, and the sphere of that, and to rest in that? I mean, just to contemplate.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes.